This is the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone, powered by the Tennessee Lottery at 916. Alongside Mark Howard, Blaine Bishop, I'm Kevin Ingram, Jonathan Schaefer, our producer. It is time for Jason Stark from The Athletic and the MLB Network. He is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today. Jason, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm great, man. How are you guys?
We're good. Can I start you off with a little trivia question?
Wait, that's my niche. I like asking.
I'm going to turn the table.
Questions is a bad gig, but go ahead.
Okay. I just saw this like 2 minutes ago. Out of the fastest 10 pitches thrown in Major League Baseball so far this season, how many have been thrown by the Cardinals' Jordan Hicks?
I'll go with 10.
10 is correct, yes. Have you seen that guy throw in person? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I have. I actually wrote a piece about him this year at spring training. It's the greatest fastball in baseball history. And he went through the whole season last year, and we keep track of this stuff now. Exactly two balls were barreled up. Two. Gosh. The whole season were hit on the barrel. And, you know, I watched, as I was getting ready to talk to him, I watched the game he pitched that day, and it was so funny to watch the Cardinals dugout because they know how ugly the swings are.
Mm-hmm.
And every guy in the dugout basically hides behind that screen because
a check swing can take
contact,
you out.
That's where it's going, right in their dugout.
That's right. Yeah, I saw him pitch in Cincinnati last year. I could not believe how fast that ball got to the plate. It was incredible to watch.
He's the thing about him is he's now got complimentary stuff to go with it, which that's been evolving since he got to the big league last year. And he's got a chance to just be a force of nature if he's not already.
Jason, it's interesting always to me how teams take on the personalities of their managers. How much is that the case with the Phillies with Gabe Kapler, especially off the ejection of Bryce Harper that game in New York last night?
Well, that was an interesting night and an interesting moment for that team. I'll be honest with you, that's as emotional as I've ever seen Gabe Kapler as a manager. I mean, I've known him since he was a player, and he can get fired up. But he's tried to suppress that side of himself as a manager. That one put him over the edge. And, you know, your hypothesis here is interesting. I'm not sure that they take on the personality of their manager because I think they're still trying to figure out what to make of Gabe.
Right.
You know, he's evolving as a manager. They're evolving as a team, certainly in terms of what they're going to be as personalities. I'm really not quite sure yet what the personality is of either of them. They're works in progress. My question about last night is, what is Mark Carlton doing listening to the dugout that intently during the fourth inning of the game? Really? That's like you guys planning your show based on the trolls on Twitter.
Oh, you mean that's wrong?
Are you saying we don't?
I recommend it. I don't.
No, that's a good plan of action. You like to track non-pitchers taking them out. I find that stuff really amusing. On the flip side, and they were talking about this, I think it was on the Braves-Indians game the other night. What's the challenge for hitters to go up there? Because you don't want to strike out or get embarrassed against somebody who's not really a pitcher. On the other hand, some of those guys can throw pretty well. What about that side of the equation?
I would say I'd sum up the goal as just avoid humiliation. it's a total no-win situation. If you get a hit, you're supposed to. Even if you hit a home run, you're supposed to.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't really count, you know?
Yeah, but if you strike out, you think that's going to come up in the room? Did you see that Jesus Sucre pitch last night for the Orioles throwing 65 miles?
Oh, my.
In a game, they gave up 12 runs, and I'm pretty sure that was the only 1-2-3 inning they threw. There's this whole phenomenon of below bat speed. And he mastered that.
Jason, you wrote a column that the no-hitter is dying. It's pretty complex for a lot of different reasons. We can chalk it up to millennials or whatever. But it's also, too, that guys just don't go nine innings anymore.
Yeah, that's really what's fueling it. You know, we went a century where no pitcher ever got taken out of a no-hitter unless they got hit by a line drive or something. Those days are over. We had a record last year for most pitchers being yanked out of a no-hitter. I'm sure we're going to break it this year. There's just no taboo that goes with it anymore. And so I understand all the forces that are fueling it. Trying to keep pitchers healthy, that matters. And I understand the whole third time through the order thing and how pitchers decline and blah, blah, blah. But it just goes back to this incredible tug of war that people are grappling with now in baseball. And that is, not everything that makes great baseball strategy makes great entertainment strategy. And you know, if we wind up with all no hitters being combined no hitters, except once every 8 years or something, that's a loss for the sport. There's no regular season event that matches the drama and emotion of one guy pitching a no hitter, going out there for the eighth inning and the ninth inning with his heart pounding and the sweat beads pouring down his forehead. And If that goes away, and it looks like it's going away, I think that's a problem.
What about the Yankees? 13 starters on the IL. It's really almost incredible. The latest, Aaron Judge. Yet they seem to be rolling along pretty nicely.
They're surviving. I give them a lot of credit. I think, as I mentioned to you guys a couple weeks ago, they are in a really soft part of their schedule, and they're, for the most part, they've taken advantage of that. They haven't gotten blown out. They were built with depth in mind, with surviving the marathon in mind, but I'm really not sure how any team can survive indefinitely down not just six everyday players, but your six best everyday players. And you know, they just got CC back, so they're only down to one starting pitcher missing. Dylan Betances missing. They're in survival mode. They've done an incredible job of surviving, but it's hard to make it through the marathon like this.
What about Nathan Eovaldi gets put on the disabled list? And you talked about the Red Sox pitchers, you know, sort of paying for their postseason last year. But Nathan Eovaldi, especially in that 18-inning game, you know the story. Took one for the team, pitched six innings, got a standing ovation from his teammates, even after they lost the game. But it seems like, you know, again, this guy's had two Tommy Johns, and he's going under the knife again.
I almost hate to say this, but like, if there was a pool in Vegas on pitcher most likely to go on the disabled list this year, Wouldn't he have won it?
Pretty much.
Seriously. What he did last October was mind-boggling. He didn't just throw six innings of relief that night. He did it on one day's rest. He did it pitching for the third time in 4 days. And it was heroic. It was unforgettable. It earned him a hell of a contract. But human beings aren't built to do what he did. Human arms aren't built to do what he did. He's been on the injured list a lot anyway. And there's another team. They're just trying to survive. I think about them a lot like the Dodgers last year when they fell 10 games under 500 in first part of May. They were chasing the Diamondbacks. I think my question is, are the Rays the Diamondbacks, or are the Rays for real? I would vote they're for real. And that's going to make for a challenging year for the Red Sox and Yankees.
Yeah, I got a list of questions here I wanted to ask you about Vlad Guerrero Jr., you know, about the Rays and all that. But you know what? How would you like to have been in that media scrum talking to Eric Kratz? He's doing stand-up comedy after catching 18 innings. I mean, some of his answers were absolutely priceless.
Yeah, well, I talked to Eric for like 45 minutes after that game, and he is one of the funniest people in baseball and one of the guys with the greatest perspectives on himself of anyone I've ever met. He used a quote I've never heard. He described himself as the R in WAR. Now, WAR stands for wins above replacement player, right? He thinks of himself as the replacement player. He's totally correct. But who else? Who looks in the mirror and actually understands that that's what he is? It was awesome.
Jason starts our guest from The Athletic and the MLB Network. On a little more sobering note, Nick Birdie, the pitcher for Pittsburgh, that injury was just terrible to see last night. You really feel for that guy. And doesn't that take you back, you know, to some of those injuries you remember from years past? I think it was Dave Drabecki and Tom Browning. I mean, different types of injuries. But, yeah. Gosh, you just hate to see a guy just crumple on the mound like he did. That was just awful.
That's the hardest thing to watch in baseball. And, you know, part of it is just the moment. The other part of it is the backstory. I'm someone who has written a lot about Tommy John surgery, mm-hmm. talked to a lot of pitchers who've had it. You know, I once chronicled the rehab process for Outside the Lines when I was at ESPN, and that road back from Tommy John is long, man. It's just months and months of pure rehab. It's a lonely process. It's so hard on these guys physically and mentally. And so Nick Birdie travels down that entire road for a year and a half. He finally makes it back. He's got 17 strikeouts in 10 innings. He's on the verge of finally carving out his place in the sport, and then has that happen. It's hard enough to watch just with no context. When you understand everything that led up to it, it's heartbreaking. It really is.
Jason, I'll finish on a little more happier note. Maybe not for Joey Votto, but I'll ask this question. Can you remember a stat like the one that he had the other day where he popped out to first base for the first time in his career? You're talking about a guy who has like 6,800 plate appearances over 13 seasons. To me, that was remarkable that had never happened at any point.
Yeah, you know, it's really been one of my favorite quirky stats ever. Just trying to follow the Joey Votto pop-up thing, because it's not just that he never pops up to first base, even though that was cool, obviously. It's that he never pops up, period. You know, you can go to Fangraphs now, and you can follow all his pop-ups by year. And there are years where it's zero, it's one. I'm going to take a look at it right now, if I can pull up real quick. Let's see here. Yeah, there's infield fly balls. None all of last season. One the season before that. None the season before that. So that's one pop-up to the infield in 3 years.
Jeez.
Really? And that's just kind of the essence of what Joey Votto is. He, you know, he's almost like he designed his swing in a lab to make sure he doesn't do that. And what he does, it's headline material.
It really is, because it's line drives or on base somehow. Jason, great to speak with you. We always enjoy our visit with you every Tuesday.
Well, likewise, guys. Hey, enjoy the draft.
Okay, yes, we will. It's going to be huge.
Will do.
All right, we'll see you. This is Jason Stark from the MLB Network and The Athletic. He is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today.